I like Spike. Now, in case you think it's a commercial for soap powder, it's actually an admiration of Spike Milligan, with me, Roy Hudd, and some actor laddie and lassie friends of mine. Robert Bridges, Graham Hamilton, Leslie Glazer, and Marilyn Cutts. I have an uncle. His name is Herbert Jam. He was 52. He worked in a laundry. One Christmas Eve, he was homeward bound on a crowded bus when he heard what he thought was the sound of music coming from inside his boot. Indeed, what was to make him famous had happened. His right foot had commenced to sing. Poor Mr. Jam tried to control the volume of sound by tightening his bootlace. It only succeeded in making the voice go from a deep baritone to a strangled tenor. At the next stop, Mr. Jam had to get off. He walked home to the sound of his right foot singing, "God Rest You Merry Gentlemen." Fortunately, Mr. Jam knew the words and mimed them whenever people passed by. It was all very, very embarrassing. For 3 days, he stayed off work. His favourite TV programmes were ruined by unexpected bursts of song from the foot. He did manage to deaden it by watching with his foot in a bucket of sand. But alas, from this practice, he contracted a rare foot rot, normally only caught by Arabs and camels. Worse was to come. The foot started singing at night. At 3 a.m, he was awakened with selections from The Gondoliers, Drake Is Going West, and A Whiter Shade of Pale. On the recommendation of his doctor, he visited the great Harley Street right foot specialist, Sir Ralph Fees.
Come in. Sit down. Now, what appears to be our trouble?
It's my right foot.
Of course it is. What appears to be the trouble with our right foot?
It sings.
Sir Ralph paused, but still went on charging.
You say your foot sings?
Yes, it's a light baritone.
Sir Ralph started to write.
I want you to go and see this psychiatrist.
At which very moment, Uncle Herbert's foot burst into song.
Just a minute, I'll get my hat and come with you.
The medical world and Harley Street were baffled. For the time being, he had to make do with a surgical soundproof boot and a pair of wax earplugs. Occasionally, he would take off his boot to give the lads at the pub a song. But Mr. Jam was far from happy. Then came the beginning of the end. EMI gave him a £500 million contract for his foot to make records. A special group was formed called The Grave. The billing was, wait for it, Mr. Jam with one foot in the grave. He was the new sensation of the year, but it became clear that it was the right foot that got the fame, not Mr. Jam. One night, in a fit of jealousy, Mr. Jam shot his foot through the instep. It never sang again. He was 52, happy. Only now he walked with a pronounced limp. L-I-M-P, pronounced limp. A singing foot by Spike Milligan. Just one of 100 reasons why I like Spike. Now, here's another.
There are many diseases that strike people's kneeses. Scrofluffus is one by name. It comes from the East, packed in bladders of yeast. So the Chinese must take half the blame.
There's a case in the files of Sir Barrington Piles. While hunting a fox one day, shot up in the air and remained hanging there, while the hairs on his socks turned grey.
Aye, Scorflifus had struck at man, beast and duck, and the knees of the world went bong. Some knees went ping, other knees turned to string. From Balham to old Hong Kong.
Should you hold your life dear, then the remedy's clear. If you're offered some yeast, don't eat it. Turn the offer down flat. Don your travelling hat. Put an egg in your boot and beat it.
And how about this? This is the start of a piece called, for no reason at all, Fretwork, the Shame of Our Cities.
Hercule Fred Bleriotti snuggled down in his favourite chair. He was a tall man, as you, dear listener, will notice when he stands up. Hercule puffed casually on his cherrywood samovar. A wisp of smoke escaped from the bowl. He immediately inserted a fresh wisp. Lazily, he drew on his pipe. He drew on the wall, the ceiling, the soles of his boots, Was there no end to this man's ability?
Well, it doesn't seem to be any end to Spike's abilities, really. Writer, actor, comedian, poet, cartoonist, and defender of all the nice things in life. But really, I like Spike because he's made me laugh more than anyone else I can think of. Here are some of his poems. There are holes in the sky where the rain comes in, but they're ever so small. That's why rain is thin.
The boy stood on the burning deck whence all but him had fled. Twit.
Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Get it out with Optrex.
I must go down to the sea again, to the lonely sea in the sky. I left my vest and socks down there. I wonder if they're dry.
My happily splashing daughter said, my legs are getting shorter. Well, she must be dim to go for a swim in shark-infested water.
And how about this at the start of a novel? Dan Milligan rolled his trousers kneewards, revealing the like of two thin, white, hairy affairs of the leg variety. He eyed them with obvious dissatisfaction.
Holy God, what are these, Daddy? What are they?
Legs.
Legs? Legs? Whose legs?
Yours.
Mine. And who are you?
The author.
Author? Author? Did you write these legs?
Yes.
Well, I don't like them. I don't like them at all, at all. I could have written better legs myself. Did you write your legs?
No.
Ah, so... You got someone else to write your legs. Someone who's a good leg writer. And then you write this pair of crappy old legs for me. Well, mister, it's not good enough.
I'll try and develop them with the plot.
I think so, yeah. From Spike's one and only novel, Pacoon. Now, Pacoon is a tiny Catholic village in Ireland. Father Rudden is the priest there.
Father Patrick Rudden paused as he trod the gravel path of the church drive. He ran his kerchief round the inside of his holy clerical collar. Then he walked slowly to the grave of the late Miss Griselda Strains and pontifically lowered his ecclesiastical rump onto the worn slab, muttering a silent apology to the departed lady, but reflecting it wouldn't be the first time she'd had a man on top of her. Least of all one who apologized as he did. The clock in the church tower said 4:32 as it had done for 300 years. It was right once a day, and that was better than no clock at all. How old the church was, no one knew. It was like Mary Branigan's black baby, a mystery.
Money. That was the trouble. Money. The parish was spiritually solvent, but financially bankrupt. Money. The Lord will provide. But to date, he was behind with his payments. Money. Father Rudden had tried everything to raise funds. He even went to the bank. Don't be a fool, Father, said the manager. Put that gun down. Money. There was the occasion he had promised to make fire to fall from heaven. The church had been packed. At the psychological moment, the priest had mounted the pulpit and called loudly, I command fire to fall from heaven. A painful silence followed. The priest seemed uneasy. He repeated his invocation much louder. I command fire to fall from heaven. The sibilant voice of the verger came wafting hysterically from the loft.
Just a minute, Father. The cat's peed on the matches.
Behind the bar, Mr. O'Toole was speaking to the pig of a face that was his wife. He'd married her 20 years ago, but still woke up white and sweating. On leave from France, he'd come out of a drinking hole in Sackville Street and bumped into a girl. It was dark, he was drunk, she was keen. He awoke next morning to find her in bed with him. He ran screaming from the house, her purse under his arm. He didn't get away with it. 7 weeks later, a giant of a man, 7 foot high and smothered in red hair, walked through the door holding her by the hand. The monster lifted O'Toole off the floor and told him to get ready for marriage or death. He'd started to object, whereupon the monster had started to hit him with great bone-crunching knuckles. All he remembered was birds twittering and her shouting, "Don't ruin him for the honeymoon! Hit him above the waist!" Leaving a trail of broken teeth, he was dragged to the altar in the grip of two monsters who looked like the kinfolk of Grendel. Finally, when the priest asked, "Will you take this woman?" a hired ventriloquist from Cork said, "I goo." And he was done.
So fair is she, so fair her face, so fair her pulsing figure. Not so fair the maniacal stare of a husband who's much bigger.
So these then are his writings, and can we now meet the man himself, Spike Milligan.
Here are some poems I think that Roy might like on this program.
I am the vicar of St. Paul's, and I'm ringing the steeple bell. The floor of the church is on fire, or the lid has come off hell. Shall I ring the fire brigade, or shall I trust in the Lord? Oh, dear, I've just remembered. I don't think we're insured.
What's this, then?
Said the fire chief.
Is this church CV? It is. Oh, then we can't put it out. My lads are all RC.
Here's another one he might like.
Through every nook and every cranny, the wind blew in on poor old granny, around her knees, into each ear, and up her nose as well, I fear. All through the night the wind blew worse. It nearly made the vicar cuss. The top had fallen off the steeple, just missing him and other people. It blew on man, it blew on beast, it blew on nun, it blew on priest, it blew the wig off Auntie Fanny, but most of all, it blew on Granny.
Daddy, how does an elephant feel when he swallows a piece of steel? Does he get drunk and fall on his trunk or roll down the road like a wheel? Daddy, what would a pelican do if he swallowed a bottle of glue? Would his beak get stuck? Would he run out of luck and lose his job at the zoo?
Son, tell me true, if I belted you with a shoe, would you fall down dead? Would you go up to bed? Either of those would do.
Elephants are contagious. Be careful how you tread. An elephant that's been trodden on should be confined to bed. Leopards are contagious too. Be careful, tiny tots. They don't give you a temperature, but lots and lots of spots. A few years ago, the Australian government asked the Australian people to submit their idea for a new national anthem, and they had, 30,000 entries, and they were all, well, how can I put it, bloody awful, to put it bluntly. And for a joke, I sent one of these anthems up, and for a joke, they sent it back. And these are the words. Oh, no, I'll sing it for you. What the devil is, because
Australia, Australia, we think of you each day. Australia, Australia, at work or at play, we think of you in the morning and in the evening too. We even wake up at midnight so that we can think of you. Australia, Australia, we love you from the heart. The kidneys, the liver, and the giblets, and every other part.
And now back to a little bit more from the village of Puckoon.
Mrs. Angel Eales was a true daughter of the Revolution, a tireless worker for the party, sexually frustrated and slightly cross-eyed. The last two having something in common.
Her late husband, Frederick Mortimer Eels, had been a professional circus midget. Twice nightly, he was fired from a cannon into a net. That and cleaning out the elephants was his job. Though he only got billed for the former. Angel had met him by accident. She ran over him in her gig.
Courting her in public was difficult, as she towered over him by 3 feet. And he made a point of only meeting her on the side of a hill. As the wedding day approached, Fred Eels was seized with a sexual phobia. Said the doctor.
There's no need to worry, Fred. I've known far shorter men marry far taller women, and they've had a perfectly normal sex life. Of course, you won't have anybody to talk to.
Love does something. At the wedding, Angel, for all her plainness, looked beautiful. And even Mr. Eels looked and walked a foot taller. It was not to last. The honeymoon was fatal. Trying to change a light bulb in a bridal suite, Fred balanced on a chair and table, fell back in the dark, broke his neck, and died. The funeral, though purple sad, seemed a grim joke. The child-sized coffin lowered into a man-sized grave.
Oh, I'm sorry, Father.
An embarrassed gravedigger apologized.
I thought it was her husband.
It is.
Is it? Then they must have buried him doubled up. Some people do anything to save money.
Pacoon really finds itself on the map when the authorities decide to place the border between Northern Ireland and Eire right through the middle of the village. The following Sunday, in church...
Father Rudden clutched the pulpit. Skipping the sermon, he launched into a secular attack on the new border. If that border is to be permanent, it means the holy Catholic departed will be forever lying in British soil. Protestant soil out there.
What?
He pointed in the wrong direction and dropped his voice. I should like you for all to feel strongly about this. And you'd better. He crashed his fist down on the pulpit rail, splitting the wood and evicting a colony of woodlice. Sign the petition you'll find hanging in the foyer. Dominus vobiscum.
Et cum spirito tuo.
The verger counted the collection. It's a miracle how some of these people's trousers don't fall down, he grumbled. Extricating the buttons from the plate.
Two little men with the backside out of their trousers were holding a mass meeting. They had both known better days, but not partaken in them.
Comrades,
said Seamus Ford, addressing his partner from a chair, I have good tidings. This new customs post at Pocoon is a boon and a blessing to men. Now, I have a plan, such a plan as Brian Boru would be glad to be associated in. Looking at him adoringly was the sad, middle-aged, unshaven little face of the faithful follower, Lenny Braddock. He scratched himself furiously, at the same time giving off a few supporting...
Hear, hear.
Seamus banged his mittened hands across his body. The deserted barn was drafty, dirty, and dungy, but rent-free. Seamus went on with great fire.
To bury the stiffs these days, there's got to take them through that new customs post. It's a gift from heaven, don't you see?
No, I don't see, Seamus.
Don't pay attention, then.
What?
Just a puff on your fag. Now, our contacts on the other side says they're short of explosives, right?
Well, if you say so, yes.
I do.
Ah.
Now, normally, without the convenience of a coffin, you'd have your luggage searched and your pockets.
That's true. Yeah. Can I have me fag back?
Now, if we could get a coffin and rig up a phony burial, we could carry enough gelignite stuff in that coffin to blow Ulster back into the Republic, you see.
Oh, by God, that's a fine plan, boyo. A fine plan. I think this is the turning point in the history of Ireland. Can I have me fag back?
What we need is a coffin. Don't snatch like that.
Me fag.
A coffin. Now, there's a mortician in Delarose Street. You got them counterfeit pound notes?
Good. Can I have me fag back?
Of course, we got to make the plan watertight. Tomorrow, I'll make arrangements for the coffin. Suddenly, it was tomorrow.
Doesn't time fly?
Life is a long, agonized illness, only curable by death. Reuben Croucher lovingly and delicately dusted the coffins displayed in his funeral parlor. They were such beautiful things. Stately barks that bore us across the Styx into the eternal life beyond. Always peace and calm within. The only sound was the endless buzzing of a lone fly who shall remain nameless. It had got dark early. He had lit the gas, which cast a sepulchral glow along the neatly arranged coffins. With a cloth, he wiped the condensation from the sightless windows. Business was bad. It seemed people couldn't afford to die these days. But what was this?
Two rugged men were approaching, both smoking the same cigarette. They were pulling a cart and heading rapidly for the shop. Pausing only to open the door, they entered. When Lenny saw the face of Mr. Croucher, he reverently took his hat off. Croucher bowed ever so slightly from the waist up.
Good morning,
he said. Then after some thought added,
gentlemen.
After all, they could be eccentric millionaires.
Good morning. We are eccentric millionaires. Do you sell coffins?
Yes, we do, sir. How many do you want?
Oh, just the one to start with.
Good, good. Who is the deceased?
It's for me friend here. You see, he hasn't been well lately, and we thought, just to be on the safe side, we'd have one now.
Now you can, well, try one for size.
We'll have that one.
Ah, a black one. A very wise choice, sir. It won't show the dust.
Mr. Croucher withheld a whimper of joy. It was the most expensive coffin in the shop. Lenny slid over the side and lay back in the pink satin padding.
It feels real fine, you know. This is really worth dying for.
Now, let's try the lid on.
How's that feel, Lenny?
Very nice.
Right, we'll have this one.
Reuben rubbed his hands with professional pleasure, the dry skin crackling like parchment. Now, sir, Reuben said, if you will step into the office, we'll conclude the financial side.
You stay there a while,
said Seamus, rapping on Lenny's coffin. In a small room at the back, Mr. Croucher slid behind an order book and perched on a fountain pen. His black tailcoat hung from his shoulders like tired wings. Neatly, he took down details in his book.
A great pot of steaming hot Irish stew was heading for the shop at 7 miles an hour. It was carried lovingly in the hands of Mrs. Reuben Croucher, ex-shot put champion of Ireland. She walked with a brisk, bouncing, athletic step, a step 40 years younger than her husband's. It had been a most successful marriage. He couldn't, and she didn't want to. They had one child. He didn't take after either of them. He did it all the time and walked with a stick. Into the shop bounded the ex-shot put champion. Cooey! Aye in there, darling. The lid of Lenny's coffin rose up.
Hello, little darling,
said Lenny cheerfully. Mrs. Croucher ran screaming from the shop.
There's your receipt, sir,
said Mr. Croucher, after carefully counting and recounting 38 forged pound notes.
We'll take the coffin back on our cart,
said Seamus, standing up. The culinary arts of the world are varied and a blessing to the sensitive innards of the gourmet, but never in his tour of the globe had Mr. Croucher seen a man in a coffin, unconscious and covered in Irish stew.
That night, Reuben lay abed, cooing through his shrunken gums. A 38-pound coffin sail. Bless us and thank thee, O Lord, for the merciful benefits thou bestowest on us. He crossed himself on his homemade prayer, turned slowly onto his good side, and fell into a deep, peaceful 38-pound dream. At 3 o'clock in the morning, he died in his sleep. The cost of his funeral came to exactly £38. His puzzled wife was now in the county jail for passing forged currency. Without her restraining hand, her son now walked with two sticks and a stoop.
My darling little baby, what will you grow up to be? The Prime Minister of England or the King of Italy? For 20 years I waited to see what he would be. He's now a dustman in Chiswick Town. Oh, dearie, dearie me.
Well, and I'm afraid that's all we have time for today. I Like Spike was a performance of some of Spike Milligan's writing, brought to life by Marilyn Cutts, Robert Bridges, Graham Hamilton, and Leslie Glazer. Spike Milligan himself took part, or partook, if you like. Now, I Like Spike was my idea, so you can only blame me, Roy Hudd, or possibly and preferably our producer, John Brell.